Thanks, Ray. Those of you who know me know I've been working for 20 years or so on manure. So this is kind of a new area for me, but one that's been a lot of fun to learn about. So this is a group of people working together, not just from Colorado State University, but also from Hawassa University in Ethiopia and a small fertilizer company in Fort Collins. So why are we doing this in Ethiopia? Well, there are some reasons that are because I knew the right people in that place, but there are some other good reasons. Things that are common to most of Africa, that it's highly dependent on agriculture, that 90% of crop production is done by resource-poor farmers, many of whom don't have access to fertilizer, and that Ethiopia is one of the countries with the highest rates of nutrient depletion in Africa, as you can see in this map. So a typical Ethiopian farm has about 5 or 6 people in a household and less than 5 acres of land, some a lot less than 5 acres. One thing about Ethiopia for a manure person is that it is the African country with the largest number of livestock. However, even there, there's not enough manure to meet fertilizer requirements. So it seems like an opportunity to work on the soil fertility end of things. So when we take a look at fertilizer use in Ethiopia, well, their prices are typical for Africa. They're about 2 to 3 times what we pay here. And then if you add transportation costs in, it can be as high as 7 times the cost of fertilizer in the U.S. Now, we've also done a little work at understanding how people get fertilizer in Ethiopia. And learned that from the time a farmer makes a decision, I want to buy fertilizer, and asks the co-op to get it, that by the time the order goes through and it comes back to the co-op and he can actually purchase it, 9 months of time goes by. And so that's another detriment to why fertilizer use is not done much in Ethiopia. So our goal here is to work with cyanobacteria as a nitrogen fertilizer. Now, some of you probably know cyanobacteria by another name, and that's blue-green algae. They're actually not an algae, they're a bacteria, and they have a unique ability to couple photosynthesis and nitrogen fixation. So they can essentially use solar energy to make nitrogen fertilizer. So you've probably also heard about blue-green algae before because they have been cultivated in rice paddies in Asia for many years, and when cultivated in that way, contribute about 20 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year to a rice crop. So our idea is, can we do the same thing for any kind of crops that don't grow in paddy systems? And so there are other people who've done research on basically seeding dry soils with cyanobacteria and tried to increase nitrogen fixation in the soil through this inoculation type process. And it increases nitrogen fixation, but by very small amounts. So our idea is actually quite different, and that is to cultivate cyanobacteria in a pond and harvest them from the pond and apply it to a field for any crop that's not being grown underwater. Okay, so overall, our goal is to develop this system, a system that small farmers could use basically to grow their own nitrogen fertilizer, and in this way, get access to fertilizer that they today don't have access to for various reasons. So our research approach is shown here, and basically we're kind of going hunting for cyanobacteria on whenever we take a trip and collect some samples. So we're building a collection of cyanobacteria cultures, and then we're screening those cultures to determine which ones grow the fastest, which ones fix the most nitrogen, and then simultaneously working on how do we optimize growth conditions for them so that we can fix enough nitrogen to make this worthwhile. So for example, looking at things like what's the optimum nutrient solution? Do they need to be aerated? You know, things like that that contribute to growth. Then ultimately, we hope to put that information together to design a cyanobacterial fertilizer production system. So the first step is collecting samples. I don't have a pointer, do I?
You can use the mouse.
Oh, with the mouse. Here we go. So we collect samples, soil samples, especially from wet areas. And this is showing in Colorado, but I've sampled in other places as well, including Ethiopia. And then we put those soil samples in Allen and Arnon media. Allen and Arnon media provides all of the nutrients that cyanobacteria need and does not include carbon or nitrogen. And so because of those omissions, after a period of time, you get cultures that look like this, that are green from the cyanobacteria that are growing in them. So because of the lack of carbon and nitrogen, it gives a step up to the cyanobacteria to grow when other things can't. So we've sampled around southern Ethiopia, in particular around Hawassa. And in all cases, to this point, what we're culturing are filamentous cyanobacteria. So you can see here they're filamentous. And they also have specialized cells where the nitrogen fixation occurs, like you can see here. There are specialized cells. Okay. Now, so that's the first challenge, get these suckers to grow, right? The second challenge is, how do you measure their growth? And so, and how do we compare strains and that kind of thing? And so we've been developing this system where you can see this high-tech fish tank approach. Fish tanks on the bottom, cutting boards on the top, and test tubes hanging down into the fish tanks. The idea here is that by having the test tubes in a tank of water that you can maintain a temperature, so and you can also adjust that temperature if you wanted to look at how does temperature affect growth rates, for example. So there are test tubes hanging in these fish tanks, and we can put different strains of cyanobacteria in there, we could put different nutrient solutions, you know, and figure out how to optimize their growth. So what we've done in that system, though, is since they turn that nice green color, you can use a spectrophotometer to measure absorbance rates, and the wavelength we're using is 665 nanometers. But what we don't want to destroy these samples, we want them to keep growing. So we did do some destructive sampling to come up with this curve here. So you can see you can correlate the dry weight biomass with the absorbance rates. And then once you've got that correlation, then you don't have to destroy your samples to measure their growth. We can just measure absorbance and allow them to keep growing. So here's an example of a growth curve developed with one particular culture and using a 12-hour light, 12-hour dark cycle at room temperature with aeration occurring. And what you see is there's a lag phase at about a week's time. And then after that first week, we've got a doubling of absorbance about every 3 days. So once we get past that lag phase, we've got a pretty good growth rates. We've done some work on evaluating what nutrient solutions work best to culture the cyanobacteria and comparing two cultures in particular as a starting place. Our goal is, in the long run, we want the cheapest culture possible, ideally that we could make with local materials in Ethiopia. But right now what we're using is two different mixed cultures. The Allen and Arnon media is a media that has many micronutrients in it, including molybdenum and vanadium, nutrients that are important for nitrogen fixation. The BG media also has micronutrients in it. It does not have vanadium, and most of the micronutrient concentrations are higher in that BG media. So anyway, we compared those two different media for four different strains. You can see the error bars. There are some large error bars here. But essentially, we've found that there was no difference between those two medias for those four cultures. We've also done some work on aeration to see how important that would be. And in this study, we used small fish tanks again. You can see we're buying out the pet store in Fort Collins. But so we have some fish tanks that are aerated with a fish tank aerator, and some that are not aerated. And you can see our nitrogen fixation rates about triple when they're aerated. And we looked at several different cultures here, as you can see. So that was a significant difference, and one that we feel is going to be important to the success here. Another challenge in growing cyanobacteria or any kind of algae is how do you harvest them? Okay, and so we've started working on ideas for harvest. And we've noticed that all of the strains, all of the cultures that we've been working with so far tend to settle. So you can see over time, the solution clears because of the settling. So what we've done here is measure the optical density using a spectrophotometer for several different strains. So basically, you stop aerating and you watch it settle and make measurements periodically and come up with these curves. So you can see that all of these three cultures settle fairly well. Now you can use that data to calculate a theoretical recovery, and this is basically comparing that optical density at whatever time you're at back to the optical density on day one. So it's a pretty simple calculation, and then you can get a graph like this of theoretical recovery as a function of time. So let's take this one, the kind of medium one. This particular culture, within about 4 hours, was 80% settled. So that's really not very long. This, you know, some are better, some are worse than that, but a day's settling time gets you a long way in this process. So if we want to use that concept for the development of a system like this, we're thinking it might look something like this. You'd have a pond that's aerated some way. We've got a drawing there with a paddle wheel, but maybe it's some other way. So you have a growth pond where you're growing the cultures. When you want to harvest, you drain to a settling pond. After it settles, you can take that nutrient solution and recycle it back to the growth pond and grow more cyanobacteria. Now, that harvested cyanobacteria could be dried and applied to soil directly, or it might be possible to grind it and put it into an irrigation system. We haven't had a chance to work on that end of things yet. So I do want to give a few more acknowledgments. Besides the team that was on the first slide, we had a team of MBA students from CSU spend a couple of months in Ethiopia this summer, basically interviewing farmers about whether they would be interested in such a system. And so they're listed here. We have an interesting MBA program at CSU called the Global Social and Sustainable Enterprise Program. And so they got some practical experience and we got some good local information. Our funding sources are from the US to this point. We have funding from USDA, Western Sustainable Ag Program, and from the Colorado Bioscience Discovery Program. And we appreciate that. I hope there's some time for questions. Is there?
Maybe one.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Heather. Just wondering, in terms of the potential for this cyanobacteria to fertilizer, what is the potential in Ethiopia to address the challenges?
Good question. We are.
Or is this just an academic exercise?
Oh, I'm not about academic exercises. I'm sorry. Oh, so the question was, is this just an academic exercise, or what is the real potential for doing this in Ethiopia? Well, based on our interviews with farmers, there's a lot of interest. So the almost all of the farmers that were interviewed, and we had, I think, about 45 interviewed this past summer, They all use some form of manure or compost, and some of them use a little bit of fertilizer, but very little. And there was a lot of interest in this because it supplies not just nitrogen, but also carbon. So it has potential for improving soil organic matter and soil quality. So I think the real question will be, can we do it cheap enough and relatively dense, you know, so not needing a lot of land to make it work. And so it'll be a little while before we can answer that question, but that's our goal, to make it reasonable so people can do it.
Great, thanks. Hopefully we'll have a little time at the end for discussion.